The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
All right, so good afternoon. We are here live on Freedom 106.5, and we are talking about diabetes and you. This Thursday, we have a very special guest. We will get to in a short while. Dr. Nicholas Maraj. We're going to talk about neuropathy and nerve pain and neurology and its effect on or how it relates to diabetes. We're going to have that conversation soon, but as we always do, I always like to talk about what's going on in the association. So we are just about to start our sixth form internship program. That program is going to run for about 6 or 7 weeks. The deadline has passed, and we now have over 600 applicants, 600 sixth formers who want to get into this program. We're going to be choosing the top 35 of them, and they're going to be with us for the next 6 or 7 weeks. So I'll have some of them on the program in the future, and we'll also be showing the activities that we are doing with them. Of course, these are young sixth formers who all want to do medicine or be in the NGO field. So you'll be seeing them, and they'll be hopefully in your area soon, because we're going to be doing lots of activities. I also want to remind the persons about our free diabetic eye screening. This diabetic eye screening is done throughout the country. It's free for persons living with diabetes. And if you, even if you're not living with diabetes and you think you might be at risk, this is a free test that you should take. We are in a location near you. So I advise you to give us a call at the Diabetes Association, which is 607-3288. Give us that call, and you can be able to sign up for that that free eye test. So that number again is 607-3288. Give us a call or send us a message on our Facebook or Instagram, and you can get that free test, that free diabetic eye test. In a few days, we're also going to be doing our camps. So we're going to have two camps. The week after school closes, I believe that's the 6th and 7th, we have a camp for children living with diabetes. And that camp is going to be hosting 80 children who are all on insulin, children between the ages of 7 to 17. And they're going to be here with us for those 2 days, learning about how to take better care of themselves, or to take their medications as they should. So we'll be doing those camps, or that camp, on the 6th and 7th. And the following week, we'll be doing our child lifestyle camp for children who are overweight or obese or at risk for diabetes. So I believe we still have some spaces for that child lifestyle camp. And if you do know a child who's at risk, again, give us a call, 607-3288. And that's the number to call at the association. You could also sign up for any of those camps there. So that's what's happening at the association. And of course, we are continuing all of our testing, nutritional counseling, and so on. So you could always reach us at any time to find out some more. But let's go into the show. Let's get into the program. And today we're going to be talking about neuropathy and really neurology and all that it relates to diabetes, and all it can relate to in terms of diabetes. And we have a very special guest, Dr. Nicholas Maraj, and he's the medical director of Synapse Medical Services Limited. He's a member of the Royal College of Physicians in the UK with fellowship in neurology and stroke from the University of Calgary in Canada. He is also a fellow of the Royal College of Physicians in Edinburgh. And in his free time, he enjoys running and doing gymnastics and playing chess. So I want to welcome to Diabetes and You, Dr. Nicholas Maraj.
Thanks so very much for having me here, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here to be able to talk a little bit about diabetes and how it affects your nerves and your brain, your spine, and all those fun things.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I think that's one of the most common questions we often get on Diabetes and You, and in the Diabetes Association, about pain and nerves and diabetes affecting the nerves and so on. So we're going to be getting into that in the program, but I want you to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself. So we know that, of course, you're a physician, but tell us a little bit more about your journey towards becoming a physician, towards your specialty, and how do you have interest in diabetes, and why do you have interest in diabetes?
It's a great question. So, when I was finishing Hillview in Form 6, I was trying to figure out what it is I wanted to do in life. And the only thing that could really come out to me is to be a doctor. I had a really, really bad sickness when I was in my young teenage years. And one of my family doctors was really instrumental in helping me overcome that. And being able to provide somebody with that sort of help and allow them to come back to some sort of normalcy in their life was really, really, really powerful to me. And I really wanted to have the ability to try to help people in the way that I was helped. So medicine seemed like the obvious choice. Went to med school here in Trinidad, went to UE St. Augustine. And during my rotations, I had a lot of things I was interested in, but neurology specifically appealed to me. It was very in-depth, it was complex, it was complicated, had a really high failure rate. It was very there's so much understanding about the brain, how it controls each and every single aspect of everything in our body and through it through the nerves and the spinal cord. So I got me very interested in neurology, and then I did when I finished med school, I did internal medicine down here in Mount Hope, specialized in internal medicine first. Then I went on to Canada to specialize in neurology. And when I was there, stroke was the most important fixable aspect of neurology I had overcome, I'd seen. And it was a really great program. So we they let me do an extra year there in stroke specifically. So I did that, and we were able to give people medications in their veins that busted up clots in their brains and allowed them to go from being completely paralyzed 1 minute to being fully functional within about a couple of hours, maybe a couple of days. And that was really remarkable. So I proceeded on to that, and then I came back home here to Trinidad to try and help the people back down here. I have a family down here. I love Trinidad, Trini from Train to Be Born. So I'm gonna try and do as much as I could, and specifically why I wanted to be here with you guys on the Diabetes Association. Diabetes is one of the most common causes of neurological impairment. For example, diabetic neuropathy, and definitely diabetes can increase the risk of stroke. And those are the two biggest things that I end up seeing. So it is really important for me here to provide some information to the people here so that they know what could happen to them, what are the symptoms like, and how it could be treated, addressed, and prevented in certain situations.
And I mean, I really wanted to touch on both of those topics separately. I want to start on talking about neuropathy because this is, I think it's been a common theme here on the program and with people with diabetes and learning about it. And for many persons, they've always complained about having these symptoms, but I've never known why it is and what they could do to take care of it. What they could do to prevent it even. And I really wanted to talk about stroke because, as you rightly said, it affects persons living with diabetes. Diabetes can be considered, I guess, a comorbidity or rather a pre-existing condition or that may lead to persons getting a stroke. So we'll touch on stroke, and I really want us to talk some more about that. But let's talk about neuropathy. And for most persons, they may have heard the term neuropathy, but tell us what is neuropathy? Where does it affect you? Is it only the foot? And what does it mean in terms of, or rather, can you break it down for us? Why does it develop and what is it?
Fantastic question. Let's try to break it down here, Andrew. So neuropathy. Neuro means nerve. Pathy means dysfunction. So it's nerve dysfunction. We have many different types of nerves in our body. We have sensation nerves that take signals from the external environment up to our brain, where it's processed in our brain to feel. So we can feel things that are cold, warm, vibration. You can feel when you're where you are in position. So for example, if you are upright or lying down, that's a different sense of sensation that your body is signaling. There's other sensation things such as hearing and the eyes, but that's not really what we want to talk about here. We want to talk about the sensation nerves. There's other nerves, the motor nerves, which control movement, and those are signals from the brain down the body for your hand to move, for your legs to walk, for your mouth to speak, for you to swallow. And then there's another class of nerves as well called the autonomic nerves or the automatic nerves. And those control senses that we, those control functions that we are not under conscious control of most of the time. Those would be like your gastrointestinal down to your anus, breathing, your cardiovascular system, where your heart is beating, where your blood pressure is being altered, your eyes dilating, your sweat glands producing sweat. So all of those are nerves, and dysfunction of any of those nerves is a sort of neuropathy. And diabetes can cause neuropathy in any of the sensory nerves, the motor nerves, or the automatic nerves. So let's take sensory symptoms first, because that is the most common trouble that most patients with diabetes have. About 10 to 20% of patients newly diagnosed with diabetes will get some sort of neuropathy within the first 5 years. And a fair deal of patients already would have had neuropathy coming to see me or at some point in time. It gets worse with patients who have poor sugar control, who've had diabetes for a longer period of time, and who have other medical conditions, for example, like high blood pressure. What they typically tend to say is that they start to get an abnormal sensation, particularly in their feet. And as the neuropathy progresses, it goes up from underneath their toes to on top of their feet to up to their ankle, up to their shins, all the way up to their knees. And then when it affects past the knees, it could also start affecting the hands. They typically describe it as some combination of burning, shooting, sharp, shocking, abnormal sensation. And in Trinidad, the word you hear all the time is Junjuni. This abnormal sensation that is feel, this feel of pins and needles. It's like basically you feel like your leg gone asleep, but it could happen for a much more prolonged period of time, and it gets more aggressive. It gets more severe as the diabetes progresses, and if you don't manage the neuropathy itself. So that's the symptoms of the sensory neuropathy mostly.
And you said it really does primarily affect the feet, or is it just in the earlier stages it will affect the feet? And you said, of course, the hands, you could get those feelings as well.
It
Get those sense.
primarily affects the feet first, and then as it gets worse, it could start affecting the hands. Now, if the hands are affected first in certain situations, it could be another type of nerve trouble that can happen in diabetes called maybe carpal tunnel syndrome, which is compression of the median nerve in the wrists of the hand, which is more common in patients with diabetes, thyroid disease, certain patients who become pregnant because it causes more excess damage to the median nerve itself. But the symptoms are kind of similar in that situation. So you'll be able to tease it out when the person is telling you about their symptoms itself.
So we know about these symptoms, and again, these are symptoms that we have patients coming telling us about these things all the time. But before we talk about what they could do to prevent or what they could do to treat, let's talk about why. Why does neuropathy develop? Why does neuropathy develop, particularly in people with diabetes?
Good question. There's several things that affect this. What we kind of break it down into metabolic factors and vascular factors. Metabolic factors has to do with the metabolism of the body, and vascular factors has to do with the piping and the supply of blood. So, for example, the metabolic factors would include the hyperglycemia itself, so the higher blood sugar. Chronic high blood sugar could lead to changes in the nerve cells themselves. And excess glucose is converted into certain other compounds, such as sorbitol and fructose, which, when they accumulate, they damage the nerves on a cellular level. And from a vascular factor, diabetes can cause damage to the small blood vessels themselves that supply the nerves, known as the vasa nervosum. That's the blood vessels to the nerves, leading to reduced blood flow to the nerves. And blood flow is necessary to everywhere in your body. It provides areas of your body with food, nutrition, oxygen, and it takes away the bad products that your body has used, the toxic waste products, for example, carbon dioxide and other metabolic processes. So reduced blood flow to the nerves will lead to damage to the nerves from that case. So metabolic factors and reduced blood flow factors will damage the nerves and cause this neuropathy.
So we spoke about the symptoms, we spoke about the cause, and again, you're saying that in persons with diabetes, it's more common in persons with diabetes than persons without diabetes. So it is a clear risk factor. I want us to talk a little bit about what can we do, what can persons do at two levels, what is done by the physician, and what can persons do who already have neuropathy, and also if a person is living with diabetes, what can they do to prevent themselves from getting neuropathy or getting that those pains? So it's three parts. What can someone do to prevent it? What can someone do if they already have it? And what does a physician do to treat it?
Right. So from a personal point of view, for individual who has the disease or who's already getting neuropathy type symptoms, it's very important to one, manage the lifestyle. So you take it from a lifestyle point of view first. That would include managing the diabetes a bit better. So getting the blood sugars under better control, managing any other comorbid diseases they might have, which may contribute to neuropathy, such as the hypertension, so high blood, high lipid content, so dyslipidemia. Other medical conditions they may have may also contribute to neuropathy. For example, thyroid disease, alcohol misuse is directly damaging to the nerves. Diabetes also affects the kidneys, and it can cause a bit of kidney dysfunction. And kidney dysfunction itself can damage the nerves. So that's sometimes a one-two punch. So you need to keep the kidney under control if you do have any sort of kidney issues there. Lots of people, so those are that. Those are the lifestyle diseases. Good diet obviously will help be an important factor in all of that. Regular exercise helps control those factors, increases blood flow to the areas that is necessary to try and prevent any further vascular damage or metabolic damage. So exercise, I tell everybody, at least 15 minutes of walking a day, every single day is necessary when they have this sort of disease. It helps from very, very mil many focal points. What else can people do? Lifestyle, tight blood control. There's medications. We'll come to that in a little bit. If you smoke, smoking is a really big risk factor for this. So smoking cessation is really important. Weight
And what
management.
about, as you say, smoke, what about persons who vape? Have you seen any evidence of vaping contributing to, or is vaping just a, not a, a young people thing still, and they haven't been affected by it?
Uncertain, so remember they're type 1 diabetics also. You can have diabetes at a younger age. So with respect to data regarding vaping and contributions to neuropathy specifically, I don't have that data on hand, and I'll look into that. I don't think it exists right now. I'm prone
But
to,
it's pretty new, so
but it definitely it has been shown to increase risk for other things like vascular risk factors. So I mean, vaping itself will increase your risk of stroke at some point in time also, so probably not
so
hundred.
so so what about so you would have spoken about personal responsibilities and things persons should do to prevent and also to deal with it. We need to speak about what the doctor does, what the physician will do to help a person with neuropathy. And I also want to talk about the link between neuropathy, loss of sensation, and amputations.
That's
But
really
we do need to
important.
take we do need to take a short break. So let's take that break. When we get back, we'll be continuing the conversation. We're talking about neurology and nervous issues and diabetes with Dr. Nicholas Mirage here on Diabetes on You and Freedom 106.5. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. All right, so we are back with Diabetes on You, and we are talking about neuropathy with Dr. Nicholas Mirage. Before the break, we were talking about the symptoms of neuropathy, and we spoke about what persons can do, or rather the things that they could do and taking their own responsibility to prevent and even deal with their neuropathy and their symptoms. So we want to continue the conversation with Dr. Maharaj, and we want to talk about what the physician actually does. So how is neuropathy actually treated by a physician?
Good question, Andrew. First and foremost, the patient comes to you. You take a detailed history. You examine the patient well. You check their, you do a proper neurological examination of them. You check their sensation. You check their muscle strength. You check their reflexes. You look at the foot exactly, and you teach them how that they should examine their foot itself. Daily self-inspection to detect any early signs of injury or infection. You definitely keep telling them that they need to wear proper footwear to prevent ulcers and further injury, which could cause things to be trouble later on. When we can do certain investigations, depending on if we're a bit puzzled as to the nature of the nerve injury, something called a nerve conduction test, where we stick some little electrodes onto the foot or the hands and shock the nerves and see what type of nerve injury is present, because not all patients with diabetes and neuropathy means it's diabetic neuropathy. It could be another type of neuropathy, and that's important to differentiate, because that might have different treatment modalities.
Mm-hmm.
From a treatment perspective, there's different medications that we can prescribe that reduces the troublesome sensations that patients have. For example, the burning, tingling, gingery, paresthesia, heat that patients have. You have neuropathic pain medication that you use. There are many, many, many available in Trinidad. One is called gabapentin, one is called pregabalin, the tricyclic antidepressant, something called amitriptyline, nortriptyline, and then there's some other medications that we use. Sometimes we use them in combination with each other. And each medication has a different profile for a specific patient. Certain people might need one medication versus the other, depending on their other comorbidities, their age. Certain patients have particular reactions to certain medications. So you might try one medication in somebody and they might have a fantastic reaction, and somebody else, it might not have a great reaction, or conversely, they might have some sort of adverse reaction. Some of these medications cause patients to become quite sleepy. It can make them drowsy. It can make them unstable in certain situations. Mm-hmm. So that would be requiring continuous review and then changing the medication as necessary. And we can go up to really high doses if patients are getting relief. But if they're not getting adequate relief, we can always go up on the dose or double up the medication.
Mm-hmm.
Patients also like to do a lot of non-conventional medical stuff. Certain people like to do acupuncture, soaking their feet in like Epsom salts, for regular foot massages. Those things are okay from my point of view, once that it's not causing any significant burden on your pocket. It's preventing you from accessing your medication and your other medical treatments that are necessary. Once that's fine, go right ahead.
And that was actually what I was coming to next, complementary and alternative medicines. And I mean, it's very pervasive in Trinidad and Tobago, where of course there are techniques and there are treatments and there are supplementations that people use. Of course, as you mentioned, some of them massages and soaking and acupuncture, acupressure and all of that. What about supplementation? So there is a train of thought that vitamin B1 high dose thiamine, I believe, assists, especially people with diabetes. What is your take on that?
So there's been a bit of studies done, very small numbers of patients involved in these studies. And so supplementation with like a combination of B vitamins, B1, B3, B6, B12, has been shown to increase the or decrease the amount of negative symptoms patients have with neuropathies. So by all means, I tell patients if they want to go ahead and supplement with it, they can go right ahead. And there's certain ones that are pushed in Trinidad, for example, like the Neurobean, either in the tablet form or in the injection form or certain other types of things. Once again, I told them, once did not break in your pocket and you can take care of yourself otherwise, go ahead. It's not a con. It's not something that's going to harm you generally.
Well, that's good because, but again, patients need to also understand that persons who are affected need to also treat them all the time with just these things. If it is that they have these conditions, they should be going to the doctor. They should be telling their doctor they have this problem for that treatment. So it's important for of course, all patients to understand that and all persons with diabetes. So we've been chatting about neuropathy and we've been talking about the symptoms, the cause, the treatment, and of course you did mention about how it is diagnosed. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about how it is diagnosed. What is done during the process of an examination? What types of tests are done to confirm that a person has neuropathy? And who does that test? How could someone get that test?
Important to note. Good. So what we do is we listen to the story. It's typically for a couple of years now, tingling, burning, shooting, gingery, numbness going on from the feet gradually coming upwards. We look at the feet, we look at the hair distribution on the legs and the hands. Certain patients with diabetes or neuropathy have loss of the hair. They have a kind of shiny appearance to it because the lack of neurotropic factors from the sensation receptors and neural tropic factors. You check the sensation on the leg with a cold instrument and a hot instrument. We try not the hot one, we try to use the cold one mostly. There is something called the vibration sensation. So there's a tuning fork we use to check the vibration in the toes and going upwards to see how much the vibration is present in the feet versus present up on the head. And I'll give you an indication as to how bad the neuropathy is. You can check the position sensation from if they understand where their big toe is down at the legs, you check their reflexes. And that's the big physical examination testing. The real hallmark of the proper type diagnosis to do something called a nerve conduction test. And that we put the little electrodes on you, we shock the nerves in your legs, we shock them up in your hands, and we get an electronic measurement of how good your nerves are functioning from a sensory nerve point of view, from a motor nerve point of view. And that helps us to tell you what type of neuropathy it is and can help us determine treatment modalities and divide it into mild, moderate or severe neuropathy accordingly.
And then that determines the mode of treatment. So that determines the direction. But before you continue, there's something you mentioned about testing the sensation, testing the impulses using electrical stimulation. There's also something that we came across where this type of device is also used for treatment.
So the TENS machine. So that's
TENS. Shine Street in Port of Spain. Together, we can make a difference. For more information, email us.
And a couple of patients, have reported good results. Some people have said it don't help them at all. So it is very individualized to the person because like with people who are suffering with diabetic neuropathy, for years and years as their diabetes goes on. I mean, they try to turn to so many different things and you can't blame them because it's a really crappy condition to have and they're just really looking for some sort of relief. And sometimes they teach us as doctors what works and what doesn't work. So it's always helpful when something is helping a patient and it's not causing them more distress, I'm up for it.
Well, that's important to note and because the next part of the conversation after we take the other break would be before the break, I want to talk about amputations. And as we move into that, there's also the area where persons who have an ulcer or have a lesion that isn't treated in time, a lot of persons in Trinidad and Tobago tend to turn to alternative treatments. So they pop or leaf and they wander of the world. So there is of course a line between doing these things and not doing these things. And so I want you to keep that in mind because we need to get to that point. But I wanted to just make the connection for us first between neuropathy and eventually somebody developing an amputation. What happens along the way and how could someone having neuropathy could actually lead to them losing a limb?
So with diabetes, you damage the nerves and you also reduce the blood flow down to the legs. So with neuropathy, what can happen is that somebody could have an injury to the leg, something that they have no idea because they lose sensation in their legs. And they walk around bare feet outside, they might get a small little insect bite, step on a stone, something that breaks the barrier between the body and the outside environment. So it breaks the skin. And then this allows infection to step in. And infection is much more common in patients with diabetes because one, in diabetes, it's a bit of an immunodeficiency. The phagocytes that are supposed to be damaging and killing external bugs and stuff, it didn't work as well as they used to. They're a bit anorexic. You have reduced blood flow down to the legs because you can also have clogged arteries down to the legs, the pipes supplying those blood. That blood could be blocked off a bit. So you have reduced blood flow, you have neuropathy causing sensory disturbance, and you have infection being more easily accessible there. That is a breeding ground for a little sore that would be normally treated and even probably not regarded in somebody who's healthy and otherwise. Mm-hmm. But in a patient who has diabetes and neuropathy, it goes from being a little sore, being a bit larger, becoming an ulcer, becoming something even more devious. And when it becomes very problematic, it can lead to amputation because then you no longer can try to treat the wound. You have to get rid of the entire septic area.
And of course, we see so many people having amputations of the lower limbs, but also digits, having the toes cut off and having pieces of the foot. And I know that there are multiple amputations being done every day. The Ministry of Health placed priority on amputations, and a lot was supposed to have been done, and some have not materialized as yet. Are we hoping that that we can get these things happening? The Diabetes Association, for instance, had proposed a plan to perform community-based screening for loss of protective sensation using the INLOS test. So that's a program that we've developed, but we have not yet been able to roll it out. We're still waiting for that support. But we're hoping to do that very soon. And we're also hoping that at the Ministry of Health, they actually in all of the RHAs, there are diabetes wellness centers, which are supposed to be treating persons with diabetic foot conditions and foot problems. So I'm very hopeful that this does expand to the point that we could be able to reduce, even eliminate amputations, unnecessary amputations, because that takes me into the next part of my question, which is, do you think that we have so many amputations because people are afraid to go to the doctor? Because the thinking is in Trinidad is once I'm diabetic and I have a cut or something with my foot and I go to the doctor, they'll cut it off. And to me, it's kind of like a vicious cycle because people are afraid that they are going to get their foot cut off, so they delay treatment. But when they actually delay the treatment, they go and it's to the stage where they need to get an amputation to save their lives. So that's been happening. What have you experienced and what have you seen, I mean, in your own practice in terms of persons and the way that they would approach or things that they would do or not do when it comes to seeking care when they are at that stage?
Quite right, Andrew. A lot of the problem is very multifactorial. So it's improper care in treating the diabetes in the first place. Then it's fear about exactly as you said, little cut turning into maybe they're going to take away my foot, they're going to cut it off. And a lot of people have unnecessary fear in Trinidad towards the healthcare field, at the doctors, the nurses and stuff says that and they're just scared, and I don't understand. I don't know how to address that without just continuous re-education in as many avenues as possible, by this avenue, continuous public education of patients that know as soon as you have your diabetes, you get it controlled as best as you can. You get a little cut, you get a little sore, come to the health center, let's get it treated. I have an uncle who didn't even know he was diabetic. He had a small cut on his foot. And just looking at him, I knew he was diabetic for a while, but he just didn't really want to take care of himself. But when his cut on his foot wasn't getting any better, tell him, you just need to go and get something done. So he went to the health center. And the sugar was about 500 and something. So he was diagnosed with diabetes off the bat there. He got treatment, and the health center was excellent for him. Like, he was going back every couple of days. And over the course of about 6 weeks, his ulcer was better. His diabetes was under control. And I was like, wow, this is an excellent story to be able to tell people. I mean, and he's not a well-to-do person. He's a typical normal person. He's drive truck, and just the story of him getting better, and that, I mean, it kind of tells us that the fear is really what kind of paralyzes patients from taking necessary steps to get their things on track.
And you're so right, it is the fear, but you also know, and I'm sure you do know, that doctors use fear as a motivator for a person to take care of themselves. So I don't know what you're thinking. Is that an old school way of thinking? Is that, do doctors still do that?
I don't know, boy, because I feel like you need buy-in from your patients to get them on board with regard to a therapeutic strategy to get them better. Some patients need fear as a motivator. I mean, some people, you just can't get through to them unless they're afraid to do something. Some people, you try to instill fear in them and they're going to run the opposite direction. So it require a bit of trying, a finesse to try to determine which one of the patients is what. By and large, the big stick approach to always work for people. So honey does attract more flies than vinegar. So you treat people a bit better. It might help, might work out a bit. That's notwithstanding, maybe the one or two people you need to have the big stick approach for them.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, there's so many reasons why I think amputations and foot diseases is so much of a problem in Trinidad and the Caribbean, because I think it's universal across the Caribbean in terms of the rates. So it may be again our culture, or I've even heard that because of the limited resources. I once had, well, Prof. Vijayanarayan Singh was on this program a few times, and we would have had a series about diabetic feet. And we spoke extensively about, priority isn't given all the time. If it is, you have to do angioplasty on a foot, and the operating theater is has to be treating somebody with a gunshot wound. So all of these factors play a role. And of course, we could talk a lot more about it. But again, when persons take personal responsibility, I think that trumps everything else. And the earlier on they go seeking care, the earlier on they find out what's happening to them, then it's better off for them. So we are coming up to the last part of the program, and I want to switch the conversation in a bit to the other part of Dr. Miraj's specialty. And we want to talk about stroke, because it's so much involved in people's lives, people who are living with diabetes and people who are affected by diabetes. So let's take that short break. When we come back, we're going to be continuing the conversation with Dr. Nicholas Miraj. We've been chatting about neuropathy on diabetes and you. So we'll be back in a few. All right, so we are back with Diabetes and You. We're chatting with Dr. Nicholas Miraj. We're chatting about neuropathy. We've been talking about the symptoms. We've been talking about what patients can do to, and we've also in the last, in the la well, just before the break, we've been talking about its relationship between, well, the relationship between neuropathy and diabetic foot diseases. I want to switch the conversation towards stroke. And why is, well, first of all, I wanted to tell persons what is stroke, what is a stroke, because most persons tend to think all different things when it comes to stroke. How can you identify stroke, first of all? What is a stroke and how can you identify a stroke? And then we're going to be talking about how it is related to people with diabetes. So let's just start with that.
What is a stroke? A stroke is the signs and symptoms due to brain, specifically when the brain, when an area to the brain is damaged to the extent that it's dead. So you have different variations. You have a transient ischemic attack, which is less than a couple of hours of reduced blood flow to the brain. That area of the brain becomes paralyzed. It doesn't be able to do the work that it's supposed to do. So, example, it's the area of the brain that controls the left hand. If you supply back blood to that area of the brain within a reasonable period of time, the cells just become stunned and they're able to revive themselves, for want of a better term. If the reduced blood flow to that area of the brain proceeds for a more prolonged period of time, the cells go from a time of being just quiet and not being able to function anymore to being fully dead. Mm-hmm. And that would constitute a stroke, definitely. Stroke depend, the different types of strokes. There's clot in the brain strokes and bleeding in the brain strokes. The clot in the brain strokes are the 4 to 5 types. It's about 80%, 75-80%, depending on the books you read. The bleeding in the brain strokes are 25-20%. The clot in the brain strokes are the more common one. They're the ones that we can actually do something really treatable about, either due to reduced blood flow to the brain from blockages of the pipes in the neck, or up in the brain itself, or due to abnormal little clots that spread from the heart up to the brain and block those pipes supplying that area of the brain with blood. So a stroke is the signs and symptoms due to reduced blood flow to the brain.
And how does someone recognize a stroke? How do you recognize that someone is having a stroke or has had a stroke?
We have an analogy. It's called BEFAST, BFAST, because you have to be fast when somebody's having a stroke. B stands for balance. So all of a sudden, the patient would have an abnormality in their balance. They may have a sensation that the room is spinning, something like vertigo, or they may be veering to one side, or they may be incoordinated with one side of their body. B, that's balance. E, their eyes, they might start to have double vision or blurred vision all of a sudden. So that's BEF. F stands for face. Part of their face may become weak, so you might see their face become a little bit paralyzed. You tell them to try to skin their teeth, and one side of their face would move up and the other side would move or not move fully. That's BEF. A stands for arm. They may say that their arm feels heavy, feels weak. You tell them to put their two arms out in front of them. One hand would stay up parallel, and the other one may drip down or may not come up at all. That's BEFAS. S stands for speech, and the patient may have some sort of speech disturbance, either slurring of their speech, inability to produce any speech whatsoever, or being or talking nonsense. That's BEFAS. If anybody has any of those symptoms, it's time to call the emergency services. It's 811 in Trinidad. So those are the signs and symptoms of a stroke. If anybody was normal and they suddenly have any balance issues, eye trouble, speaking trouble, facial weakness or arm weakness, time to get them to hospital.
Mm-hmm. And as I said, time, and you said call the emergency services, I want to ask you a question. So you're saying time matters here. So, and I mean, I've had relatives who've had stroke, and I'm sure you know people in your own family who've had stroke, and waiting for an ambulance sometimes, depending on the area you live in the country, may take a while. Would you recommend, you know, if you have a vehicle, take the person to the hospital immediately? Does time matter so significantly that waiting an hour for an ambulance versus taking your car and taking them in 20 minutes, what would you recommend?
I would recommend getting the person to an emergency service as fast as possible. If the car is the better option, yes. If it's middle of the day with traffic and the emergency and the ambulance would be the better idea, that would be the better idea there. Mm-hmm. Because from the beginning of a stroke, you have about 4.5 hours to give them, if it's a clot in the brain type of stroke, you have 4.5 hours to give them certain medication that can bust up the clot in the brain, or a little bit longer if it's a certain type of stroke where you can sneak a wire up into the brain and pull out the clot in certain situations. So the time is brain for every 1 minute is about between 1 to 2 million brain cells are being damaged. So the more time that you save, the better.
So time is important. And and so quickly, we just have a few minutes left, but you mentioned the treatment. So is it just that the stroke treatment is immediately after? What if someone doesn't get in hospital the next day? What is the course of action then to treat someone who've had a stroke?
First would be to determine the type of stroke that they've had. If they have a bleeding in the brain stroke or a clot in the brain stroke, if it's a clot in the brain stroke, try to figure out what's the cause of it so that you can try to prevent further stroke.
When the time to go, God wants you to know that this is not a show. It's time for us to soar back, keep the load down.
Blood thinners, addressing risk factors, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. If it's a bleeding in the brain stroke, you identify what could be the underlying cause for the bleeding in the brain and treat it accordingly. And then the most important thing thereafter is physiotherapy, physiotherapy, physiotherapy. That is the one thing that patients can do that gets them better with time. I can't harp on enough how important it is, because lots of people don't do the physiotherapy or don't get the physiotherapy, and that compromises their recovery.
And I agree totally. And we need to talk to a physiotherapist soon about some of these things, because there's so much related and so much that can be related there. But I totally agree with that. And it's so important. I think we need to have a separate program just about stroke and to go into detail, because we've had an abridged version here. And the only reason I did it is because I saw in your bio that you do have the experience with stroke, and it's been a question we've always had on the program. So I think we definitely need to do a part two to this session.
Let me know when I come back on. We'll do it.
Definitely. So you are listening to Diabetes and You on Freedom 106.5. We've had Dr. Nicholas Mirage here, and we've chatted about neurology, diabetic neuropathy, and we went on to talk about stroke a little bit. Very enlightening conversation today, and very much would have answered a lot of your questions that you often have here on the show. Next week, we'll be here again chatting with another one of our very special guests about another topic concerning diabetes. I want to end our program today by, of course, telling you all that you could reach out to Diabetes Association at 607-3288 for any of the services that we do offer. And if you do need assistance in any way, give us a call. I want to give Dr. Mirage last say, and Dr. Mirage, in 1 minute, your closing words.
Diabetes damages the nerves. It causes strokes. Patients with diabetes, the most important thing you can do is try to control your diabetes, get the blood sugars down. If you have high blood pressure, control the blood pressure. High cholesterol, control that. Make sure your diet's okay. Definitely, definitely give a considerable time to exercise, because that helps all of those comorbid conditions. For diabetic neuropathy, you want to try and see a doctor as soon as possible, because you don't want to suffer with it unnecessarily. If you do have a cut or a sore on your foot, please treat it sooner rather than later, because that will help try to prevent you having any sort of amputation or procedure done to the leg. Patients with stroke is a high risk for patients with diabetes. BEFAST, that's the analogy. Look out for their balance, look out for double vision. Any sort of facial weakness, arm trouble, or speaking difficulty, time to get them to hospital as soon as possible. Andrew, it's been a lovely, lovely time chatting with you. I really
I
appreciate
really,
this opportunity.
definitely, definitely. We have to do this again. And I really liked your summary. It kind of sounded like an AI generated summary there. It's really, really comprehensive. But
The one I give all the time.
but I'm so glad we did this today. So again, join us next week at 12 noon on Freedom 106.5 for Diabetes and You. Thank you, Dr. Mirage, for being with us today, and we'll continue this conversation on stroke and neuropathy at another time. Until then, have a great day, everyone. Goodbye.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.